We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com. And on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning, your Derby Day morning, with us here on Off to the Races. We appreciate it. My name's Frank Vespi, and for the next 60 minutes or so, we're going to be talking thoroughbred racing and breeding in Maryland, across the Mid-Atlantic, and around the country, but most particularly in Louisville, Kentucky, because, again, it's Derby Day. We may mention that a few more times. Today's show, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com, the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. Lots of ways to keep up with our stuff on the website, theracingbiz.com, the socials, the free mobile app, the whole routine. Now, on today's show, I might have mentioned this, talk Derby to me. You're going to have plenty of Kentucky Derby talk on this Derby Day 2023, the 149th running of the Kentucky Derby, the Run for the Roses, most exciting 2 minutes in sports, all the cliches. But maybe you remember what Ogden Nash, the humorous poet, had to say about the big race. The Derby, he wrote, is a race of aristocratic sleekness for horses of birth to prove their worth to run in the Preakness. Preakness coming up 2 weeks, May 20th. Don't forget to come out to Pimlico for that. Now, a lot to do on today's show. We're going to close the hour. I want to preview this. We're going to have Nick Hahn and his handicapping sidekick, the man who has Derby in his name, Derby Bill Watson. Those two are going to join us to do some serious, or perhaps not so serious, handicapping of the Kentucky Derby. And about 10 minutes from now, we're going to have a chat with Chris Corman. He's a sports editor of the Baltimore Banner. And we at the Racing Biz were excited earlier this week to announce a new editorial partnership with the Banner for Preakness and Triple Crown coverage. You may have already seen one or two of our stories on the BaltimoreBanner.com. We'll have some of theirs on our site. Very much looking forward to working with Chris and the good folks at the Banner. At the bottom of the hour, right about 10:30, we're going to have Kerry Thomas of THT Bloodstock. He's going to join us. The really interesting and a little bit different way of analyzing the Kentucky Derby, or any horse race for that matter. He and his partner Pete Denk put this together. He gives lots of credit to Pete, and it's really cool stuff. I think it really helps you get a different and more holistic understanding of what's going on in a horse race. You want to stick around for that. We're also going to have a visit with Larry Johnson. He's the owner of the stallion True Valor. And speaking of True Valor, I want to say a special thanks to friends of this program, including the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, Wanamaker's online horse auction site, and yes, True Valor, new stallion standing at Northview Stallion Station. All right, now I want to talk for a minute about the four Kentucky Derby scratches. Those scratches, including of Santa Anita Derby winner Practical Move and Wood Memorial winner Lord Miles, well, they obviously have a big impact on the field. Removing, in the case of Practical Move, a major contender for winner honors. They also let in three horses that were on the also eligible list. But one other thing these are, in my mind, these are an example of racing working the proper way. Three of the horses were scratched by their connections when the trainer determined that he just didn't feel as if the horse could deliver his A-plus 100% performance on Derby Day, and they decided it was wiser to live to fight another day rather than run a poor race on Derby Day. The fourth horse, Lord Miles, was scratched by order of the stewards after trainer Safi Joseph had two other horses collapse unexpectedly, and regulators determined it was important to get to the bottom of why before allowing his horses to compete again. Now, obviously, losing a horse is a tragedy, and obviously for connections who have to scratch out of a race like the Derby, even when they don't lose the horse, it's devastating, but this is the way it's supposed to work. Horsemen and regulators putting the health and welfare of the horses and riders and the integrity of the sport first. Now, to the racing. Friday saw the running of the Kentucky Oaks. That's the filly version of the Kentucky Derby, a 1 1/8 mile million-dollar race for three-year-old fillies. It was pretty mischievous who's going to wear the lily. She took the lead turning for home and resolutely held off Gambling Girl to post a 10-1 upset. Here's how it sounded from Larry Colmus.
Rush in the center of the track, Pretty Mischievous to catch. Gambling Girl to the outside, coming after her. Gambling Girl and Pretty Mischievous, these two down to the wire. Pretty Mischievous, Gambling Girl, Pretty Mischievous wins the Kentucky Oaks.
Pretty Mischievous, trained by Brendan Walsh for Godolphin LLC, and went over $1 million in career earnings with the win. Tyler Gaffleone was in the irons. Also Friday at Churchill, Pennsylvania-bred Caravelle did her thing, winning the unbridled Sydney Stakes on the turf. If all goes to plan, she's going to make her next start at Royal Ascot, so that would be a pretty nice feather in the cap for that PA bred. Finally, today's going to be your last chance to bet the Preakness Future Wager. Pick the winner of the May 20 Preakness, and you can make money. That's how betting works, huh? How about that? Kentucky Derby favorite Forte is a 7-2 future wager favorite currently. And at those odds, that, my friends, is not a good bet. Anyway, your mileage may vary. You may want to get in on that action, or you may want to get in on some other action. So 28 or so ways to bet the Preakness future wager. You can do that up till 6 o'clock this evening. All right, let's bring in Larry Johnson now. He's a good friend of this program, the owner of the stallion True Valor, standing at Northview, and maybe a guy known to put a little money through the windows once in a while.
Larry, good morning. Welcome to the program. We've been talking about True Valor for the last few weeks, and I guess as we come to wrap this up, if I'm a breeder, I've got a mare, why True Valor?
Well, first of all, thanks for giving me the opportunity again, Frank. When I look at who or how I should breed a mare, a couple things come to mind. First of all, the performance of the stallion. True Valor was a horse that competed at stakes successfully from ages 2 through 8, ran triple-digit buyers at 3 different distances, won grade 2, grade 3, just barely beaten in a grade 1 this past year, ran against the best, ran in Dubai, Europe, California, Canada, and frankly got better with age. At age 8, his last year racing, he won off a 13-month layoff and then was beaten a length in a grade 1 Jaipur, beating a head bob in the grade 3 Troy to Golden Pal, multiple Breeders' Cup winner. So I think he's certainly got performance. Pedigree would be the next thing I look at. He's the son of Kodiak. Kodiak himself has been the leading sire of 2-year-olds in Europe for 6 consecutive years. More importantly, perhaps, Kodiak is becoming a sire of sires. He's had 5 sons go to stud that have sired stakes winners as 2-year-olds, 2 of them grade 1 stakes winners at 2. So he's from a sire line. So, those to me are the most important qualities to look at. He's from a female family that's deep. He showed himself to be versatile, not just in distances where he won from 5.5 to a flat mile, but in surfaces. He's a winner on synthetic at Woodbine. So to me, he's really got the elements necessary. He's a well-balanced horse. He's not overly big. I think he'll get you a good, correct foal. And, I think he's got all the attributes. You never know exactly where the next really successful stallion is going to come from, but when you look at the various elements that would be kind of a predictor, I think True Valor's got them all.
So let me ask you this. Are you putting your money where your mouth is on this one?
Yeah, I sure am. We'll see how it turns out 3 years when they get to the races. But, I've got 9 or 10 of my own mares that I'll be sending to him. And they're not just average kind of mares. Each of them is either a stakes winner or stakes producer and some both. They're the kind of mares that I could, as an option, be breeding them to commercial sires with sales value potential to sell in either Kentucky or perhaps even New York. And I've opted to, give True Valor the best chance possible. He's, as is the case of particularly regional sites, he's not going to get big numbers of mares. So to me, it's not just about the numbers, it's about the quality. And so to use your expression, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is and give him the best chance to get off to a successful start. And that's all he really needs. If they come out running as 2-year-olds, he's you know, then the world will look at him in one light that's different from the unproven horse. And, you know, we see that repeatedly where, you know, a horse pops with a bunch of two-year-olds and all of a sudden their book is full. I'm hoping that, you know, I can get some successful horses to compete at age two and show what I think he has the potential to actually become.
True Valor, really intriguing new stallion standing at Northview Stallion Station. Larry Johnson's been on with us the last few weeks talking about his stallion. He is the owner of True Valor. And Larry, I can't let you go without one last question. Tell me who's going to win the Derby.
I'm not sure I'm going to put my money where my mouth is on this one. Well, I don't like the morning line favorites. You know, from 3-1 to 5-1, I don't like those horses. I think they're going to be trip compromised. I like a little bit this horse Verifying, who drew, I think, the two hole, who's got early speed. I think will be on the pace. His buyer numbers have improved. He's by Justify, so he ought to be able to get the distance. And so if I was – and the other horse I would look at is Practical Moment or Move, whatever his name is.
Practical
Moment,
the
horse that won the Saint-Denis Derby. So if I was to pick, I would probably focus on those two. If you look at their morning lines, they're both double-digit, which I think would be remarkable. And I'd throw out the favorites.
All right. A guy who's been known to gamble a little bit, both pushing money through the windows and also – owning and breeding horses, the owner of True Valor, new stallion standing at Northview Stallion Station. Larry Johnson, thanks so much for joining us once again.
Always great to be with you. Thanks again, Frank.
That was Larry Johnson, owner of True Valor, the new stallion standing at Northview. Now, I want to turn our attention. We were excited earlier this week at the Racing Biz to announce an editorial partnership for Triple Crown season with the Baltimore Banner. The BaltimoreBanner.com is the website. The Banner doing great work. They're a nonprofit news organization focused on Maryland and Baltimore, and they're doing great work. And so we're very excited to work with them this Triple Crown season, and I wanted to bring in their sports editor. His name's Chris Corman. Chris used to cover racing for the Baltimore Sun. He's worked with USA Today, now at the Baltimore Banner as their sports editor. I wanted to bring him in, talk a little bit about the Preakness, talk a little bit about our partnership, and also maybe get his Derby pick. Maybe we'll talk Derby as well. Here is Chris Corman.
Chris, good morning. Welcome to the program. Excited to work with you guys this year around Preakness and Triple Crown issues. Thanks for spending a little time with us on a Saturday morning, and thanks for agreeing to this partnership between the Racing Biz and the Banner.
Yeah, thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be on the show. As you know, I admire your work and admire everything the Racing Biz does, and I am just thrilled to be thinking about horse racing again and being involved in the coverage and can't wait to see what comes from our partnership.
We'll talk about that for a minute because you covered racing for the Baltimore Sun a decade or so ago, and you covered a little bit for USA Today when you were there, but it's been a while since you were sort of getting immersed in the industry. Do you feel, is this like riding a bicycle, or is this like, holy smokes, what happened?
You know, I'm probably a little bit of both. I mean, I think, as you know, the more things change in Maryland racing, the more they stay the same. A lot of the issues are, you know, if 10 years ago, if you had said to me, hey, they might shut down Laurel and move all racing to Pimlico, I would have said like, oh man, Frank's lost it. But that's where we got, you know, but I'm not in any way surprised that things have twisted that way, because anyone who's sort of followed Maryland racing knows that there's been these just push and pull on how it's going to move forward. There's never been sort of a clear path. So jumping back in, I'm not surprised that it's a little bit hard to untangle what's going on. I'm really excited to get to Pimlico next week and talk to the trainers and the jockeys and see the horses work. And, you know, that part to me was always the really magical part. And people were in the horse industry were so amazing when I was, you know, I had never covered horse racing before. I covered I think it was probably the 2012 Kentucky Derby. I jumped on the beat and, you know, I was welcomed to training farms, breeding farms, You know, anyone in the industry that I wanted to talk to always gave me the time. And it's just such a fascinating world to explore. And that's always what I've looked for as a reporter, is just something where I can dig in and learn so much so quickly and meet all sorts of different people. You know, that's another great thing about racing. It's you have the blue blood owners, and then you have the people working day to day with the horses. There's this wide spectrum of people involved, and it makes for great stories. So I hope that when we really dig in starting next week, that it will be like riding a bike, and we'll get right back to telling great stories.
Do you have a favorite story from years past that you can share? Anything you remember particularly? I know it's a long time ago, so.
You know, I covered, was it Hamilton Smith? Is that his name? The trainer?
Sure. Yep.
Yeah, Ham Smith, and he had done talking and in the Derby. And, you know, it had just been so long for him that he was working toward that, and I could tell it was a big story, and it was a big deal to him. But Ham is just so, you know, he's just so him. He's, you know, there was never any, like, I couldn't tell, you know, he was certainly not going to go on some big long soliloquy about what it meant to him. But it clearly did mean so much that he had made it that far. And I just really loved that story. And then he had young Sheldon Russell on Done Talking, and, you know, I now he's a grizzled vet in Maryland. And I know his, you know, his wife is a top trainer now, but back then he was sort of fresh faced, wide eyed. But just again, someone who I said to him, I was like, wait, you get up on this horse and race at that speed? Like, how do you do this? And he said to me, you know, he just told me like what it was like and how he got there, and that he'd grown up doing this, and he didn't stop and think about it. And I just had these wonderful conversations with them. I was at Churchill Downs without knowing much about what was going on and really trying to figure it out. And those two were so welcoming and open to explaining to me what was going on. And it was just a really nice story to cover. You know, there's many others. I visited, you know, the farm, the Boniface farm. I visited the ponds, you know, their operation. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, meeting all those people and getting to know the story of different horses that they loved was great. You know, dealing with Bruce Quaid, who was the head of the racing commission. You know, there were times that I would be in Ocean City and him and I would go over to Ocean Downs and just spend an afternoon talking about horse racing, and I didn't know how to bet, and he taught me how to win money. So I'll always be appreciative of that. But yeah, the Ham Smith one always stuck out. And Stuart Janney the next year had Orb, and you know, Stuart is you know, an incredibly polished person. You know, perhaps the most you know, polished businessman I've ever really had a personal relationship with, as far as getting to really talking to him about how he got where he got and what brought him into racing. So that was a different experience, but also a rich one. And, you know, he had his family there, and I was able to be behind the scenes with them as they were going through that experience. So I just had so many that really, really stuck with me. I'll have another, and that whole, the training team around them, you know, young guys, you could tell they were out drinking the night before, and they'd come in and work the horse anyway. You know, they'd be there at 4 a.m. They were having just a blast. So I have so many memories that really stick with me.
Talking with Chris Corman, sports editor of the Baltimore Banner, the Banner and the Racing Biz, announcing this week a partnership focused on the Preakness and Triple Crown. And Chris, from your perspective, what is the Preakness? What is racing? What do these things mean to Baltimore and to Maryland writ large?
Yeah, I think a lot more than most people realize. You know, I think there are ways that the Preakness could probably, you know, Pimlico, this is obviously a part of the discussion of redoing Pimlico, right? How can it become more of a hub for a part of the city that has suffered from disinvestment? And you know, I certainly hope that happens, but it does bring a huge number of people, of fans from out of town who are spending money and injecting that into the economy. You know, I am as skeptical of some of the numbers thrown around by professional sports teams. You know, they'll say we're generating X billions of dollars. Sports economists will tell you that that's generally not true, because those fans are people who would be in the market anyway, and they would just spend their money at a restaurant or a movie theater if they didn't spend it at an Orioles or Ravens game. But the Preakness truly draws people into Baltimore, puts a beautiful face on Baltimore, makes, Baltimore, I think, unfairly has a reputation as a place that you don't want to go, but it's a great place to go. And there's many wonderful places to stay and to visit, and Preakness brings those people in, and it does provide some economic engine for the Park Heights area. But more than that, horse racing in Maryland is so important because of the land that it protects. You know, there's so many horse farms. If you drive around, I live in Cockeysville, and I have three kids. I used to drive them. If they couldn't nap in the afternoon, I would get in the car, and I would drive by all the horse farms of people I got to know a little bit, and just take a quiet drive through the country. And it's providing opportunities for the workers on those farms, and it's keeping that land and keeping a bit of Maryland culture in place. So I think it's just hugely important, and the state has, you know, I think adding the racetrack authority in the latest session shows that once again the state knows how important it is to try to get this figured out. So yeah, it's just vital to Maryland for sure.
What kinds of stories are you looking forward to kind of running down over the next couple of weeks as we lead up to the 148th running of the Preakness Stakes?
Yeah, you know, I think we have not dug in too much on figuring out what the future for racing is, and I'm anxious to see what our reporters, you know, we have Pam Wood is you know, one of the better political reporters in the state, and I know she's going to start looking into that and really trying to figure out where the winds are blowing and what happens next. Hayes Gardner at the Sun had a great story on it. Hayes is fantastic, but I think we're going to start digging in and seeing what's happening there. But for me, it's really the people stories, you know, getting to know whichever trainers and jockeys end up coming to Preakness. I just having the opportunity to stop by their barn at 6 a.m. Sun is just coming up. You know, it's Maryland weather in May, so it could be like 45 degrees. It could be 87. You never know. But just talking to them and finding out what brought them to this moment. And for so many of them, it's, you know, for the Todd Pletchers and some of these the well-known jockeys, like that's, it feels like a big time sport. You know, it feels like you're covering the pro athletes that we're used to covering with the Orioles and Ravens. But for so many of them, it's a once in a lifetime thing. You know, the idea of being in a Triple Crown race is something that they dreamed about, and that they know it may never happen again, because there's so many workaday trainers and jockeys just making a living throughout the country, and one, you know, the big horse from their stable emerges. Telling those stories is always so wonderful for me. And then the culture of the Preakness too. You know, we had a great story today about a program that was in place last year to try to give local businesses a chance to serve food at the Preakness, and it didn't work out for them. But I'm hoping that this year we'll be able to tell stories about other local people who are getting a better deal with some of the programs at Preakness. And you know, Bruno Mars is playing. There's this party in the infield. I love covering the culture of Preakness as well as the business side of it, and obviously the horse the race side of it.
Chris Corman is the sports editor for the Baltimore Banner through the partnership between the Racing Biz and the Banner. You'll see some Racing Biz coverage on the
lots
Banner.
Lots of it.
which is the BaltimoreBanner.com. And you'll also see some Banner coverage in the Racing Biz. And we're definitely looking forward to that. And all right, Chris, one last question. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you on the way out the door here. Who wins the Kentucky Derby?
You know, with all these scratches and the changes to the field, I'm gonna go with Mandarin Hero jumping in, coming over from Japan. I remember his sire, Shanghai Bobby, in 2012. I think he was the 2-year-old champion. That's right when I was starting to cover racing, and there was a lot of hype around him, and dealt with a lot of injuries, and has been a pretty good stud. And I think this is Mandarin Heroes from his first group of Japanese born horses, and it'd just be nice to see, you know, just to broaden the scope, you know, see a horse come over from Japan and win this race and sort of open that up. You know, I know he's like 4-2. I think he was second in the Santa Anita Derby. So it just, I think it would be, you know, a lot of times I root for the story. I think it'd be an interesting story. I think somebody other than Pletcher Cox having a winner in this race would be just a fun thing for the people out there to write about and for us to follow in the week ahead. So that's my pick.
Well, I like it. I like that pick. I think he's an interesting horse. I love what they did with him. I love that they brought him over from Japan early, trained him at Santa Anita, ran him in the Santa Anita, got beat in Eyelash there, but I think he might be sitting on a nice move forward. And if he does, he's going to be a handful in the Kentucky Derby. And as you said, that would be a fun story. All right, Chris Corman, well, good luck to you and Mandarin Hero with your Derby pick, and look forward to working with you over the coming few weeks.
Yeah, can't wait, Frank. It's going to be a good time.
That was Chris Corman of the Baltimore Banner, thebaltimorebanner.com. Editorial partners with the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com for Preakness and Triple Crown coverage. Looking forward to that good stuff from Chris. All right. Still to come, Derby Bill, Nick Hahn, end of the hour. Quick thank you to supporters of the program, including Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Wanamakers.com, Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, and True Valor Stallion at Northview Stallion Station. Let us change directions here a little bit. Let's start talking a little more directly about the Kentucky Derby. I want to do something a little different, though. I want to bring in Kerry Thomas. Kerry is THT Bloodstock. THT puts together, Kerry and his partner Pete Denk put together a really cool document called the Patterns of Motion Analysis. It's a different and more holistic way of looking at what a horse race is. You know, it's not just individual horses running. According to Kerry and Pete, it's a herd in motion, and how those horses interact with each other, how they find space, how they relate to each other, that's going to go a long way towards leading to the outcome of these races. Really interesting stuff. I think you're going to really enjoy this segment. Kerry Thomas joins me.
Kerry, good morning. Thanks for taking a little bit of time to join us here on Off to the Races Radio. I had mentioned in the intro, you've got a new patterns of motion analysis for the Kentucky Derby. That's up on thtbloodstock.com, also bristnet.com. And it kind of starts, I think, from the foundation of herd dynamics. And I wonder if you'd tell us, first of all, what the heck are herd dynamics?
Well, you know, first of all, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here this morning. You know, herd dynamics are... You know, my focus is we all know what the horse is, but herd dynamics is a look at who the horse is. You know, what is the psychological makeup of these athletes? You know, how are they handling stress? How are they responding to you know, herd environments and the stresses in the environments? And, you know, how efficient is their sensory system? I mean, you know, herd dynamics looks at the operating system that runs the machine, because, you know, if an athlete was all they were was just a great physical body and all it was breeding, you know, we would have a whole lot of grade one horses out there, because, you know, a lot of horses are very well bred. But there's this thing called the psyche that kind of runs that machine. So we need to know what that's doing. So that's what we do.
You know, I mean, one of the things you say that I think is very interesting, and you know, a lot of us who are handicappers, we look at the speed figures and we look at all these sort of individual elements of the horse. And sometimes we might even look at, you know, how the trip might set up, who's going to be in front, who's going to be behind, whatever. But I think one of the things you're saying that I think is really interesting is you're looking at the race as a herd in motion. Is that
exactly
fair to say?
It is. It is, because, you know, You can do a lot of different things with a horse, but, you know, when push comes to shove, basic instinct is still going to play a role. a very important role. And, you know, over longer races, especially like the Kentucky Derby, you know, the herd dynamic structure begins to play itself out. Now, you know, what we look for in these, you know, in our analysis each year, and this is our 13th year of doing it, like you said, out with Brisnet and on our website, but, you know, one of the primary things I'm looking at is, of the many things, but, you know, does this horse have the mental capacity or are these psychological aspects? You know, what is the mental part of this horse? Is the herd dynamic efficient enough? Is the sensory system balanced enough to handle the situational chaos? Or are they going to have to physically outrun, you know, are they going to have to outrun their competition? Or can they influence their environment? Or are they going to be influenced by the environment? And that's a big deal, because you can have really talented physical athletes, but they're not, you know, mentally they lack that grit. They just don't have that competitive edge to them, you know, that they need to get through some of this chaos. And when push comes to shove, they tend to defer to horses that are stronger. You know, if a horse doesn't have natural leadership capacity and they don't have a sense of independent nature, which is a very difficult thing to find in a herd animal, if they don't have that sense, they're going to be very happy to follow a horse that does.
You just mentioned 13 years doing the patterns of motion analysis for the Derby, and I know that this really comes from many, many more years of study. But what could, as a layman, is there stuff I could look for that, you know, maybe I'm watching the Derby before the race on TV or whatever. Is there stuff I could look for that might give me a clue into how these horses might interact with each other?
Yeah, there certainly are, you know, from the abstract point of view, you're looking at these, because we do the evaluations that we do for the Derby horses is all through film study. So the information that we provide in there is all from studying the film and a breakdown of the film. But, you know, you look for certain ways that a horse is expressing themselves. You know, their emotional state will come out through their physical state. You know, they're going to show you, you know, they wear their heart on the sleeve, and they're going to show you a lot of what's going on between the ears and as far as stress goes. And, you know, yes, horses do very similar things with their ears, and, you know, you're looking for sweating, you're looking for the obvious signs, but, you know, what you're looking for, one of the key things you're looking for is, you know, when a horse does act up a little bit, or the ears are darting around, you know, really in a defensive manner, you know, kind of almost expecting something to happen, or they're feeling very, very tense, you know, you're going to see that. And, you know, what you want to look for is how long does it take a horse to recover from that? You know, Is it a residual thing? Are they holding on to that stress? How are they handling that? And it gives you a pretty good clue, and especially when they're with, you know, going out with the pony, you know, you can kind of see, you know, how much direction they need from their peer, from the horse that's leading them, and that they're with. You know, what kind of agitation are they even aware that horse is there? Sometimes horses can be so tense that they don't even have, you know, it seems like they're not even aware that they're alongside another horse sometimes, you know.
We're talking with Kerry Thomas of PHT Bloodstock, the patterns of motion analysis for the Kentucky Derby up at thtbloodstock.com and brisnet.com. And Kerry, this seems like, you know, a lot of the tools that we might use as handicappers are very, you know, if we're handicapping in America, are very kind of U.S. centric, because our charts are done in a specific way. We have speed figures that apply in a sort of specific way. And you can't really translate that stuff to Europe or Australia or wherever. Seems like your work really could translate. And I wonder, it sounds like you have been doing some international work that kind of proves the validity, if you will, of your work in an international forum.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I just got back from Australia in March, and we did I did a weekend seminar, and then I went up to a herd dynamic seminar and a sensory soundness seminar in Sydney, and then I went up to the Hunter Valley in the Coolmore in Godolphin and checked out some stallions and did some stallion evaluations, and so yeah. You know, and it is, because it definitely, not only does it cross over, you know, the pond, if you will, it also, you know, the work that we do crosses over all to all disciplines, because, you know, the herd dynamics, and there's a whole bunch of layers to it. And if you get folks get a chance to visit the website or get the report, you'll get a bigger picture of what I was just talking about in this little snippet. But it's really, I always say herd dynamics is for the horse first and the discipline second. So whatever the discipline is, the same principles that we look at and that we, you know, identify, apply to all different disciplines. But racing has kept me and kept us the busiest over the years. And, you know, we have clients from New Zealand, Australia to here and in England and all around the place.
And I guess the applicability across disciplines, it really amounts to essentially whatever you do with a horse is still a herd animal, and they still have to find their place in the herd. Is that kind of fair?
Yeah. You know what? There's something very important to always remember, that for a horse, you know, there's two things that a horse is going to seek by nature, and that's going to be harmony in their environment and contentment with their peers. That is the reward for a horse. You know, they're not a predator. They are a prey animal. So they're looking for harmony and contentment in that herd structure. And it's very, very important. And, you know, these things play a role. If it plays a role in their daily lives, it's going to play a role in how they perform. And not only how they perform, but how we as humans, you know, care for them and train them and coach them. You know, I always say that you train the physical horse, but you coach the mental horse. You know, there's physical and there's mental. So there's coaching and training that goes into that. And you know, you have to nurture, enrich while you develop. And you do that based upon the individual's herd dynamic character traits, because that is who they are, and it does affect everything that they do. And if you want to optimize physical talent, you need to, you know, nurture and enrich that horse.
Now, Kerry, let's talk about the biggest herd that any of us is going to be aware of this weekend, and that's going to be the Kentucky Derby herd a little bit later Saturday. And, you know, I was reading through your patterns of motion analysis, and the first thing that struck me, you know, just sort of on a very, you know, flying at 30,000 feet level, is in years past, if I recall correctly, you'd have four tiers and you'd have, you know, a few horses in the first tier and several in the second and third and so forth. This year you have five tiers, and in the first three tiers, the highest rated horses, you only have a total of five horses. So it seems like from your all's perspective, this Derby season, there's a much smaller group of horses than typically that seems likely to master all the sort of facets of winning a Kentucky Derby. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it is. You know, and that's really just kind of the way the way the ball bounces. We, you know, you got to call it like you see it when you're studying the horses, and you know, putting them in, you know, what I call the herd dynamic performance tiers. You know, and I always look at it this way. I always look at it from how many times out of 10 is this horse likely to finish in this position or, you know, because we all know that a physically talented horse can get the drop on their competition, even if they're not as mentally equipped to take them down, if the situation works out for them. And, you know, that's going to happen, and that's racing. But, you know, how many times out of 10 is that likely to happen? And which of these horses have the combination of, because you have to have both. You have to have, you know, the mental capacity, and you have to have the physical talent as well. You have to have that, those two things working in concert together in unison to be an effective and consistently effective athlete at the highest levels. And, you know, looking through all the races and looking at these horses, that's just kind of how it shaped out this year, that the performance tiers and that hierarchy worked out the way it did. So to me, the higher, of course, you are on the tiers, the more probability of success that you have from a herd dynamic standpoint in collaboration with your physical talent. So that's how we came up with. And of course, you know, hey, you know, somebody from a tier four could pop up there, and that's not impossible. But for me, it's kind of the more unlikely scenario. So that's how they come up this year. But yeah, we usually have more, just the way the competition fell this year.
So it seems like reading through the patterns of motion analysis, which again available at phtbloodstock.com, Kerry, it seems like Forte is pretty clearly the top dog in the group. Not that others, as you just said, can't jump up, but that's what it's going to take. Somebody's going to have to jump up.
Somebody's going to have to take it. And that's not to say that that can't happen, because obviously that does happen. But you know, the very interesting thing about that makes this very interesting about herd dynamics is that, you know, in nature, these high level, especially colts, you know, in these quote unquote stallions to be, there's a shelf life of operating at the elite level. And we never know how long that is. You know, in nature, there's like I always call it the escalator up. And, you know, once you get to the top of the herd, you know, when you have you are the lead dog, and you have the most emotional intelligence, you have the most independent nature, and you're the most sensory sound and blah, blah, blah. But there's a time period that you're going to be up there. And then you're going to come down, you know, you're only going to be up at the top for a period of time, by nature. So there's always another horse coming up, you know, and that's by design. You know, in nature, stallions, they, you know, they're lead stallions for a little while, and then they're taken out by a young colt / stallion comes out of the bachelor herd and takes them out, and then he takes over the herd. You know, and that's just the nature of the beast when it comes to Mother Nature's plan. And so you never know how long that's going to be. Unfortunately, in American racing, we don't get to see these stallions or these colts race, you know, to be mature horses. Oftentimes they're even retired after the Derby. So we don't get to see the full how this plays out, but someone's going to have to take it from him. He's at the apex, and there are, you know, there's certainly sharks in the water, if you will.
In your second and third tiers of sharks were Angel of Empire, Dermo Sotogake, Tappet Trice, and Kings Barnes. I want to briefly just touch on Kings Barnes, because I find him interesting in the sense that he's the most lightly raced of all the horses in the Derby, with the exception of Mage, who they each have made three starts. So it seems like he's got pretty high upside, but perhaps has to really accelerate growth to get up to where you see Forte as being right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing about with horses, one of the things that we track, and if you get a chance to, if you get the report, you'll probably find some enjoyment in reading all the details. But, you know, growth patterns are very, very important that we track. I'm tracking the growth patterns of the horses and how they are progressing, and in what areas are they progressing in, you know, in their herd dynamic, you know, what parts of their tendencies and learned behaviors, you know, which ones are starting to take shape? Are the tendencies overriding learned behaviors, or do they default back to natural tendency under stress and competitive stresses? There's a lot of different layers to studying this, and it's for me, I call it the magical world of herd dynamics, because it's just, to me, it's the fascinating part of the unique individual, is to dissect all these things that make them who they are, and there's a lot of different layers to it. But yeah, so tracking the growth patterns, you know, and to be fair, sometimes you just don't have enough body of work to make a full assessment. You know, a lot of these horses coming into this race are still, you know, they're still being sculpted. You know, they're still a work in progress at some time. So we have to kind of project, you know, their growth pattern curve, if you will, and where do we think that they're headed. Do we feel like they need, are they one race away from learning what they need to learn to handle a different part of the situational chaos that they couldn't handle before, you know, or can they hold it together, or are they still having issues with certain things in certain areas? You know, the sensory system is such an important part of this. Like, you know, people are very familiar with physical lead changes, but, you know, there's a sensory lead change that has to take place. The sensory system clears the space for the body to move through freely. And, you know, a stimulus cannot transfer from one sensory aspect to the other smoothly. It's going to disrupt physical pace. You know, there's two different types of speed. There's physical speed, but there's psychological pace. And those two things need to be, you know, in harmony for the horse to move freely through the herd.
A lot of stuff to chew through and think about here.
Yes. And I'm sorry, I'm very passionate about it, so I kind of tend to run on.
The report is the Patterns of Motion Analysis from Kerry Thomas, and thtbloodstock.com is the website. You can get the report there or breastnet.com. Kerry Thomas is the man behind the Patterns of Motion Analysis. Kerry, thanks so much for joining us here on Off to the Races.
Very interesting stuff there from Kerry Thomas. THTBloodstock.com is his website, Patterns of Motion Analysis. Good stuff, a good way of looking at how horse races develop. Going to talk with Derby Bill Watson and Nick Hahn for a little different take on how to handicap the Kentucky Derby in just one moment. Just a quick thank you right now to our program supporters, including Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, True Valor, Wanamakers.com, and the Maryland Horse Breeders Association. Now, you remember, may remember, that's easy for me to say, Derby Bill Watson from his days as the on-air handicapper at Colonial Downs. You know Nick Hahn from Nick's Picks on theracingbiz.com. They have been the dynamic duo of handicapping for some time, and wanted to bring them in and talk Derby to them. Let's see what they have to say.
Nick Hahn, let's start with you here, since you are alive in the Oaks Derby double. Pretty mischievous. Nice pick to start the day.
Yeah, I had to go a little deep in that Oaks Derby double. I couldn't afford to add that filly into a lot of the other wagers, the multi-day wagers that are so popular on these big weekends. But I'm alive with Forte and Angel of Empire in the Oaks Derby double, so I'm excited about that payoff potential.
Yeah, especially if Angel of Empire comes in. You might you need a wheelbarrow? I'll lend you one.
I'll take it.
Bill, what do you make of the Kentucky Derby? What do you see going on here, other than horses scratching out every 5 minutes?
It's definitely been Practical Move was the big one, and the Santa Anita Derby takes a big hit there with Skinner out too. You know, my reference to Leonard Skinner, did I change his name? You know, we're famous name changers in Washington D.C. So. Skinner's out. I mean, the Santa Anita Derby, just if it wasn't for the Japanese saving it, I guess it'd be totally nobody from the Santa Anita Derby would make it. And usually that's my top pick comes from the Santa Anita Derby.
However, not this year.
Mandarin Hero. Mandarin Hero comes from that. And he's, what, one of the two, three horses that have ran 100 buyer?
But he is not your top pick, is that correct?
Oh, not mine, no, but he's dangerous.
I agree with that. But you're he's one of the two Japanese-bred horses that make the field here, and I believe you have some love for the other one in particular.
Yes, sir. I drove by the Japanese House of Steak the other day and had a you know, brain alert. Said, take Dermo Sata Gaki in the Derby.
just
don't
like
pronounce
that
it too many times. Hideka Atanasha and Christopher Lamore is a little easier for me, but you know, I do like the horse. I liked him over one. I think he paid me like $18 over there in UA Derby to fill up my gas tank with fuel from the oil guys over there in Saudi Arabia. So. Probably the most impressive thing is he's from your biscuits, which means, you know, just Japanese is coming over here and buying horses in Kentucky and taking them over there and breeding them. So eventually they're going to win this thing.
They won
the Breeders' Cup. Cup they won. So they're doing things the right way. They're buying Kentucky horses and taking them over there and breeding them and letting them run before, 50,000 people at Tokyo every night.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of good things going on with the Japanese breeding and racing program, as we saw last year at the Breeders' Cup, as we saw at the UAE Derby and the Dubai World Cup. So a lot of good stuff going on there. And Dermo Sata Gaki certainly looks like a major player. He just crushed the field in the UAE Derby. But, Bill, let me ask you this. I mean, a lot of horses have come out of the UAE Derby that seemed like might – they might be competitive in Kentucky, and they ended up nowhere. Are you concerned about that history?
Oh, yes, I am. I'm going to eat sushi for a year if this horse doesn't finish in the top four. I'm very concerned. I think they're, what, 0 for 23 in the money at Kentucky?
Something like that. Yeah, it's not good.
It's been horrible. But they are getting better and better, and they're using Mind the Biscuits won $5 million about. So they're definitely buying the right horses to take over there and breed. And the track over there is phenomenal. And they're doing everything the right way out there for some reason. Not totally sold on them. I mean, I like Forte, and I like Tappet Trace, and I like Two Fills, and I like a few more horses here. So, you know, not shocking if they go 0 for 25. You know, as you said, their track record is not bettable. You know, if you're a sports data freak like they got out in All Betting Sports. I mean, if you're a data freak, you're not going to like the horse.
So, Nick Kahn, the interesting thing there is Bill just named off a bunch of horses, including Forte, who's one of your two in your Oaks Derby Double, but he did not name the other one that you have in your Oaks Derby Double, Angel of Empire. Tell us about him.
I think what impresses me most about this horse, he beat 14 in the Risen Star at the Fairgrounds. He beat 10 in the Arkansas Derby at Oaklawn Park. So he's got 22 horses in his last two races on two different racetracks. And to me, just with his breeding, Classical Empire, Pioneer of the Nile, who gave us American Pharoah, I just like the breeding of this horse. I think he's kind of flown underneath the radar. I kind of like Forte, and Forte was my pick for 6 weeks. But there's been a little bit of news, and you just can't take the favorite in what is now a 19-horse field. So I went with Angel of Empire as my top pick. And I think he's just a little bit underrated, and I think he's sort of coming into his own. He's improving, and I think this is a horse that can get the job done with Brad Cox and Flavian Pratt. I tried to find, like, forever, it was Forte and everybody else. And then we had that weekend when they ran the Bluegrass, the Wood, the Santa Anita Derby, and all of a sudden the field just seemed to get a lot closer to Forte. And two of those horses scratched in the last 24 hours, which isn't, like, I mean, it's a big deal, but when you look at it historically, they had four horses scratch out of the 2015 Kentucky Derby. They have the alternate entries, temperature spikes and everything else happens. The thing with Lord Miles is a little confusing, but, I wanted to find a horse other than a favorite. I wasn't convinced that Forte was a solid, solid favorite. And that's why I reached for Angel of Empire here. If you look at like Dermo Sotokaki, the last horse Derby Bill took that won the UAA Derby was Mendelssohn, who finished last in the Kentucky Derby. I just have to see it first. If I get beat, I get beat. I actually like Mandarin Hero a lot more because this is a horse that ran neck to neck with Practical Move, almost won the Santa Anita Derby, has a start in the U.S., doesn't have to travel, which I think we're starting to find out a little bit more how bad, how travel can impact some of these horses with these fever spikes and whatever. So I kind of like the fact that he was here, and I think this is a real solid threat. But for me, it's going to be Angel of Empire, and then you start looking at horses like Tappet Trice, who just is huge and comes down the stretch like a storm front or something. I think that's a very threatening horse as well. Forte, I had mentioned. King's Barnes is a horse.
Let me jump in here a sec, Nick.
Sure.
So you guys both like Tappet Trice a little bit. I mean, I think the thing that stood out to me with Tappet Trice is that he really closed nicely in the bluegrass at Keeneland. He made a strong kind of middle move into contention and wore down verifying, and nobody else was really running out of the back in that race. And so Bill, you also like this horse. That's what caught my eye. What caught your eye about him?
Well, I like he's not bothered by anything. Four different tracks. He's just ran lights out and closed in each race. All four different tracks. Pletcher knows what he's doing. Saez, probably one of the hottest jockeys outside of Kentucky, and Tyler Gaffalione. Saez probably riding better than the Ortiz brothers. And so I'm all over Tappet Trice as far as the good late running, passing a lot of horses late. If he gets stuck in traffic, it's the only issue to me. That horse got a good chance of winning. Angel of the Empire, as Nick said, is Forte are right next to each other out of the gate. So they'll be, and they're the same stalking type style. So they'll both be interesting to see which one goes ahead of the other one. Angel Forte, that'll be quite a battle out of the gate. Luckily, they don't have that split gate like they used to between 14 and 15. Now it's all, one tier. So yeah, they'll be staring at each other coming out of the gate. It'll be the interesting part there was Flavian Pratt jumped on Angel of Empire over King's Barn. So he had his choice there, and he chose Angel of Empire. So I tend to agree with Nick on that one.
Let me ask you one other question, Bill, one other horse that you have that I want to quickly touch on, and then Nick will touch on King's Barns as well. But, Bill, you like Two Fills a little bit. Horse actually broke his maiden at Colonial Downs, won a stake at Churchill a little bit later after that, and then just ran huge on the synthetic at Turfway. What's grabbing you about Two Fills here?
The numbers out of that race. I mean, I remember Animal Kingdom came out of the Turfway surface and turned into a monster. And this one, Jerry Ledbetter's the key. Ledbetter's the key there. He ran at Colonial Downs with him, and he knows the horse very, very well. And he knows not to get him. And the one time he lost, he went out too far. I can't remember which race it was, a nighttime race, one of the derbies. Iowa or something like that. I don't know what it was. He came out a little bit too early, and he learned some patience in the last race, the Jeff Ruby Stakes. And anybody wins the Jeff Ruby Stakes gets an extra Derby Bill buyer point because I like the stakes.
Now, Nick, you also are looking at King's Barns a little bit, and I think he's a super, super interesting horse here. He's just absolutely been thrashing his rivals.
Yeah, he absolutely has. He's undefeated. Todd Pletcher actually kind of lamented a little bit that he didn't get one more start out of this horse. And I think that might be the knock on King's Barn. I am heavy Pletcher in this derby. And I'm trying not to let that distract me. You know, one of these things about picking the derbies, you can't let, like, superstition get in the way. And I don't see why Pletcher is a real threat. And if you think about it, who in recent memory, except for maybe Baffert, could sweep the trifecta in the Kentucky Derby? This is probably about as close as it will ever come to happening with King's Barn's Forte and Tappet Trice. So I like that he won at a mile and 3/16. That's the longest that most of these horses have ever run.
All right, Derby Bill's got Dermosotogake on top. Nick Kahn has Angel of Empire. Gentlemen, good luck today in the Kentucky Derby.
That's going to do it here for us on this week's Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday with us. We do appreciate it, especially on Derby Day. Thanks so much to our show's supporters, including Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, True Valor, the new stallion standing at Northview Stallion Station, and Wanamakers, Wanamakers.com, online horse auctions. Thanks to all our guests on this week's show, which featured Terry Thomas, Chris Corman, Larry Johnson, and Nick Hahn and Derby Bill Watts. Keep up with racing and breeding all week long on the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You can tune in next Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive to hear the independent voice from Mid-Atlantic Racing and Breeding. My name's Frank Vespi. Have a great week, everybody. Happy Derby, and we'll see you in the winner's circle.